Mutual Broadcasting System presents I Love a Masquerade, transcribed.
But, Jack, not only is there a policeman outside Hope's door, but there's a doctor and a nurse inside with her. Well, what's the need of Reggie, a gardener, too?
Hope's got a fighting chance to stay alive. The doctor says with an even break, she'll pull through. I'm going to see if she gets that break.
I don't get you, Mr. Packard.
Yes, please explain yourself. Do you mean you're protecting her from something?
You bet I'm protecting her from something, Mrs. Randolph Martin.
But that's absurd. Hope was accidentally shot when she and Cherry were wrestling for the gun.
Maybe.
No, maybe about it. You have the word of your own companion, Mr. Long here, who saw it.
Yeah, there ain't no getting away from that, Jack. I saw it, all right.
I wish I'd seen it.
Why?
Look, Doc, I want you to tell your story again, in front of Grandma Martin and Faye here. Go over it again, every detail.
Well, when Reggie come running upstairs and said Hope had escaped from the library and was loose in the house, you told me to stay right with Cherry, not leave her for a minute.
Yes?
Then you and Reggie run downstairs. Well, the minute you was out of sight, Cherry started in saying, "Don't let Hope go to the furnace room. Don't let Hope go to the furnace room." Kept saying it over and over. And then she says, "Hurry, hurry, go tell him. You must warn him."
What did you do?
Well, she sounded so scared, I thought maybe that I ought to tell you, and I started out the door. And just as I got out in the hall, I remembered you saying, "Don't leave Cherry under any circumstances." So I whirled around and tiptoed back to the door, and there was Cherry out of bed and putting on some slippers and her bathrobe. Well, I grabbed her and stuck her back in bed.
Where was the terrified mouse going?
Well, she said she was going to find Hope, that she thought that she knew where she was.
Then what happened?
Well, then the bedroom door was open, and I thought I heard somebody out in the hall. Cherry said it was them, that they had come back. Well, I sneaked over to the door and looked out, and nobody was there.
Some more of Cherry's romantic nonsense.
Yeah, well, I hardly got back in the room when Hope comes in.
Now, this is the part I'm especially interested in. Be very sure about every detail. Where were you standing?
At the foot of Cherry's bed.
What was Cherry doing?
Well, the minute she saw Hope come in the door, she sat up in bed.
And Hope, where was she?
Well, she come in the door and walked about halfway between the door and the bed at first.
All right, now go on.
Hope just walked in and said, "Hello, Cherry." Well, I was looking at Hope, but Cherry made kind of a funny little gurgling noise in her throat, and I looked at her, and she was kind of green around the gills and trembling.
Cherry afraid of Hope? What are you talking about?
Well, that's the way it was, Faye. I'm just telling you what I saw.
Horse feathers.
Well, I'm only telling you what I saw.
Go on. What then?
Well, I said, "Hey, Hope, everybody's looking for you. Why'd you dodge out of the library?" She said, "On account I got to see Cherry, my little sister Cherry."
Just how did she say it?
I can tell you how she said it. She was making fun of Cherry.
Was that it, Doc?
Well, yeah, kind of, all right. Cherry was a-shivering all the time. But she said, "Oh, I'm so glad you came. I was so scared for you." Then she said, "I love you so, Job and you."
The mouse always was sloppy with her emotions.
Yeah, it kind of made the hair stand up on my neck. Her saying sweet things in a kind of pleading voice and all the time trembling so she could hardly talk.
What was Hope's reaction?
Well, she said, and now you ain't got Job." And Cherry said, "But I still got you." And Hope said, "No, you haven't. Not any of me." And then she started toward the bed. Well, Cherry kind of cringed down and said, "Go away if you don't love me." But Hope kept a-coming until she got right up to the bed.
What were you doing all this time?
Well, just standing there at the foot of the bed.
That's great.
But, Jack...
Forget it. Go on.
Well, when she got right up to the bed, she pulled out Job's gun with a silencer on it. And the next thing I knew that they was fighting over like a couple of cats. And before I could get around the bed, it went off. And Hope sort of stood up on her tiptoes and then just crumbled up, all in a heap.
You said before that Hope said it was the gun that killed Job?
Yeah, that's right, she did.
You're sure she didn't say where she got the gun?
No, just that she found it.
Mr. Long.
Yeah, Grandma?
Was it your impression that Hope intended to shoot Cherry with that gun?
Well, she was sure enough going to do something with it.
But she didn't say anything about shooting Cherry.
Well, no, not exactly. Just look what I've got.
Then maybe she actually just intended to show the gun to Cherry. Cherry got excited and thought she was going to shoot and made a grab for the gun.
Well, maybe.
Doc, you believe Hope came up here with the planned purpose of killing Cherry?
Well, doggone it, Jack. She was all steamed up for something. You could see hate all over her face. You'd have thought Cherry was a worm the way she stepped on her. And when that gun come out of her dress, there was no fooling about it.
I don't believe it.
Well, let's see now. If Hope did intend to kill Cherry, could she also be responsible for the other deaths?
Well, she was the last one to see the chauffeur alive. That we know about.
And she was sitting in the library right next to Job when he was shot.
Nonsense.
Not such nonsense as you might think, Grandma.
I say nonsense.
Well, if that's the way you feel.
It's exactly the way I feel. None of my granddaughters is a murderer. Nor are they connected with murderers. The chauffeur and Job were killed by men outside this house. Hope was accidentally shot. That's all there is to it. To try to read anything more into it is unjust and unfair to the name of Martin.
Grandmother Martin, you know better than that.
I know nothing of the kind. The police will eventually find the killers of Job and the chauffeur. The doctor gives Hope a good chance for recovery. That's the end of it.
You believe that, Faye?
Why not? What Grandma says goes.
You're not interested in where Hope found the gun with the silencer? You're not interested in who bound and gagged Cherry and carried it out of the furnace room? You don't want to know what makes the baby cry when it's... Here.
Huh? What's the matter, Jack?
Doc, did the baby cry before Hope was shot?
Hey.
It didn't?
No, not a peep out of him. You don't suppose he's losing his grip, do you?
Well, there you are. That proves the shooting of Hope was an accident.
It does?
Certainly. You said yourself the baby always cried as a warning when one of the family was in danger.
Yes, and certainly Hope was in danger, whether accidentally or by plan. Why didn't the baby cry?
Because it happened too fast.
But if our psychic baby can anticipate a planned attack, why couldn't it anticipate an accident just as easily?
Well, I guess I don't know.
I'll tell you why. It didn't dare cry.
But why not?
Never mind why not. But that's the answer. It didn't dare cry.
Well, ain't you going to say any more than that?
No, if you don't get the answer from that, I'm not going to tell you.
Mr. Packard, you mean you know more than you're telling us?
I know a great deal more. I know who the murderer is. I know where I can put my finger on the baby when I want it. I know who killed Job and how it was done. I know who they are. Those they people Cherry's so frightened of. And she has a right to be frightened. I'd rather be where Job and the chauffeur are right now than to have them after me.
Mr. Packard, you're talking like a madman.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, fella. What's eating on you?
So you know who the murderer is.
That's right, Faye.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Very interesting.
Faye, I asked Cherry this question. I'm asking you. Do you know a radio actress by the name of Pauline West?
What's that?
Oh, you do.
Pauline West... What has she got to do with this?
If you know Pauline West, then you certainly know
yes,
that.
Yes, of course. Why didn't I think of it before?
What's this nonsense about Pauline West?
You never heard of her? An actress on the radio?
What would I know about a radio actress?
Well, Faye, apparently you're the one person in the house who knows her.
Well, what of it?
I called the broadcasting company where she had done most of her work and asked them where she lived. They gave me this address.
That's preposterous.
I don't think so. Down in the furnace room earlier tonight, I found casting sheets.
You found what?
A printed form from the broadcasting studio giving the day and hour of her broadcast and how much money she was to get.
How much?
Well, it wouldn't buy any fur coats.
Then we may assume she's not a star.
No, run-of-the-mill actress.
Well, young man, there's no actress in this house, run-of-the-mill or any other kind.
Faye.
Yes?
Remember the night the chauffeur was killed? You told me you'd been down in the furnace room burning some letters.
Yes?
It wasn't casting sheets you were burning, was it?
Oh, really? Are you asking me to break right down here and confess all my sins?
I'm just asking you if you were down there burning casting sheets and that some of them were dropped unnoticed by you.
No, I wasn't burning Pauline West's casting sheets.
But looky, Jack, this don't make sense. If there's a girl named Pauline West in this house, why ain't we seen her?
You want to answer that, Faye?
No. Do you?
Not just yet.
I didn't think so.
But I will tell you one thing. You're one person who isn't going to get out of our sight for 1 second from now until this case is cleaned up.
Dangerous?
Very dangerous.
Are you saying my granddaughter, Faye, is dangerous?
Faye understands what I mean.
Sure.
Doc.
Yeah?
Faye's your one and only responsibility from now on. I don't care where she goes, what she does, or what happens. You don't leave her. Not under any circumstances, get it?
Got it.
Hello, Shadow.
Lady, me and you is the same as handcuffed together. Beginning now.
Well, so you don't forget it.
Mr. Packard... I've changed my mind.
You've changed your mind about what?
I've decided that your services in this house are no longer needed.
You what?
I say I don't want you here any longer.
Well, that's too bad.
It's not too bad. It's the end. Get your things and get out.
Hey, looky, Grandma.
You heard me. Get out, at once.
You mean now, just as the case is on the point of being solved, you want us to leave?
Yes.
You want this murderer free to roam this house? You want your granddaughters left unprotected to face sure death? Is that what you want?
I want you to get out.
Very well.
Hey, Jack.
Shut up, Doc. Very well, I'll turn over my information to the police and we'll get our things.
Wait.
Well?
There's a check for $10,000 waiting for you at my attorney's office.
Hot dog.
On the understanding that the moment you pick it up, all three of you leave Hollywood and disappear for a year.
After I've turned my information over to the police.
No. You talk to no one.
That's out.
For $10,000?
Absolutely out. You know as well as I do that I have information in this house that the police would never find out. You know that every granddaughter in your house could be killed, and except for what I know, it would remain a baffling mystery to the end of time.
Yes, I know that.
Well, that information is not to be bought, not at any price.
Then if I was the murderer, do you know what I would do?
It might be interesting to know.
If I was the murderer, Mr. Packard, I would see that you, of all people, never left this house alive.
Hey, Grandma.
Yes, I'm quite certain that is exactly what I would do.
Further transcribed adventures of Jack, Doc, and Reggie will come to you tomorrow at this same hour. I Love a Mystery, written and directed by Carlton E. Morse, comes to you Monday through Friday, featuring Russell Thorson as Jack, Jim Bowles as Doc Long, and Tony Randall as Reggie York. Frank McCarthy speaking.